Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good. Good.
192.965. We're a little scattered today. Shell is joining us from home. She had surgery last week.
I'm here.
And Rob is on his way to an appointment that he has to be there by 3 o'clock, so he's dialed in on his cell.
Okay. Terrific.
Otherwise, we're all present and accounted for.
All right, good. Well, what's on your mind on this wonderful day here?
I don't know that there's anything on our mind forefront. Yeah, I've got a couple of questions that can probably work in a little later, but we've been working through our segmentation. We've been contacting clients in the top 20% and talking to them about introducing the new service model that we're going to be implementing. We've established our average target minimum and the team target. So I think,
okay.
I think we're moving in the right direction. These calls seem to come so quickly, though, once a week.
I know. It's like total immersion, you know. There's no escape. It's like going to class, you know. You got French keep Spanish class or whatever keeps moving along really fast.
Right.
Seems slow in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, wait a minute. But
yeah.
What we find is that you can keep up with this pace. You'll feel a little overwhelmed, but if it's slower than this, you get bored, and it's weird. We've experimented with all kinds of different combinations, but this seems to be the one that works. Pretty intense for 12 weeks, and then once a month after that, and then people kind of go, wait a minute, let's take another look at this whole thing.
Yeah.
And
we just kind of have a little bit of a
little bit
using
of a what?
Folders, or would rather have it more millennial.
Well, you can use electronic communication. You can use all the advantages and leverages of electronics with emails and texts and that makes the agenda easy to do. That makes the executive summary easy to do. You can even keep most of your notes, obviously, in some sort of electronic file. But the physical presence of the folder seems to have some value, or we wouldn't keep using it. Trust me,
Hey, Rob.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rob here, and I agree with Brian. I'm going to kind of use the folders. I like that idea. And I said to the other groups, hey, if you want to incorporate then eventually the electronic stuff, do it that way. But at least start with the folders. But just so you know, I'm going to be a little radio silent because I'm driving now. So far, this is good. It's helping me organize a lot of client information. So anyway.
Yeah, and the clients like it too. That's the part you always have to remember in this, is that our job here is to educate, train, develop, cajole, help our clients make better decisions. And all this stuff that we're doing is improving the client experience. And as much as it's sometimes inconvenient for us, it's much better for them. So, the work you're doing, the effort you're putting in, the consistency of your process is wonderful for your clients. And they will try and reward you if they can. If they can bring you more assets, they'll bring you more assets. If they can give you an introduction, they'll give you an introduction. So what you're doing is you're overweighting the scales. And so they're going to feel as though they owe you. And that's nice. So,
it's an interesting point. On a conversation I had yesterday with clients, the very first thing they said after we talked through it is, You know, I think that maybe, you know, our son and daughter would be able to benefit from something like that. You know, I wonder who they're working with. So they, I kind of saw that happen yesterday.
Right. Yeah, they
you
will.
I explained
they
to them will. That, you know, they even said they might not have a lot of money, and they talked about the, well, you know, they're basically what we call, you know, they get kind of a different treatment as butlers and, you know, maybe a four with one.
Right.
One in-person meeting.
Yeah, and that's really a service to our clients so that so we keep the family together, and eventually, you know, most of our teams are now multi-generational. So we want our clients' relationships to be multi-generational. We don't need every small account, but where we have clients who would meet our minimums, if, you know, it's 5 million divided by two children, it's 2.5 million, that's a great relationship. We don't want to lose them. So, you know, 1 million divided by 10 children, again, not necessarily a great situation for us. But the, you know, so you use some common sense, and that always works. So let's get to work here on the minimums. What'd you find for the team? Absolute minimum and target minimum.
750 and 1 million.
Okay. Is everybody okay with saying no to 500,000?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Good. Take a little while, but you'll get it. What you find is that you'll get quite proud of the fact that you have standards, that you're not just out there begging for new business from anybody. And you'll be proud of it, and it will show up in your work. You know, the work you do is going to be a little higher level. It's a little more sophisticated, and you're going to be able to be more proud of the work you do because it's going to be consistent, and every client's going to get a great experience, and you'll get rid of that guilt you have from not calling clients and not really taking good care of them. And just sort of having them on the books but never calling. So that goes away. Okay. How about maximum number of clients that you're going to have and then a target maximum?
So the target should be lower than the actual?
Yeah, what we find is that all human beings would prefer to work less than to work more.
Well, I will say, as we've been through the segmentation process, probably 40% of the way through two of us here, Rob and I have both gotten down to about 120 households, but I still would rather be working closer to 100.
Yep, okay. So we'll put 120 with a target of 100. And once you do this for, 3 months, 4 months, you're going to say, whoa, I don't want to do that anymore. I want 70.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of have to feel it because 5 a day is a lot. And if you have 120, you're talking 6 a day
right.
With some butler. So that pretty much cuts out, you know, free time, prospecting time, other things, and the point is to get a balance between servicing existing clients and growing your practice. So we'll get there, though. All right, so did you take a look
at
the practice?
Well, that was pretty much a 50% swipe, pretty much, for us.
Okay.
Yeah, so that took a lot of chopping to get down to that. So I realize there's another level of chopping to do, but that was a couple levels already to get to where we are.
So you feel good? You feel okay about it?
For now, yes.
Yeah, good. Good. Congratulations. We should celebrate that. Because it's hard work and it's, you know, there's no immediate, like, oh, wow, this is great. You know, I'm giving away clients. But it has to be done because you got to find time.
Right. And it's not quite as bad as somebody who just has that and is giving them away. I mean, we have a team, so we're just redistributing amongst team members at this point still. We haven't gotten down to that very bottom yet where they're going to be sent off elsewhere.
But even that is giving up control, and that's a. Are they going to do as good a job as I am? Are the clients going to be upset? You know, so you have all these things that go through your head, but it will work fine. Okay, in terms of looking at your existing practice and going back and identifying niches. Within or, you know, where the clients came from. How did you do on that exercise?
Did all right. Rob, you want to talk first?
Yeah, Brian, I can. What's interesting is we kind of have a different expertise or different clientele for each of us. A lot of mine are business owners, and I have a lot of IRA rollovers. So that's kind of my two main points of emphasis, while Brian and some of the others are a little different.
Rob, where did the IRA rollovers come from?
Because when I started out in the business, and Brian can attest to this, the way I built everything was cold calling, and so my call was, it's IRA season. So every call I made to a prospective client was pretty much on an IRA or an IRA rollover. So that's why.
Awesome. Now, were there any particular companies where you said, oh, this is a gold mine, I got a bunch of people in this company, or is it really very random?
It's somewhat random, but there are a couple companies where there's an emphasis on. So. We have two or three companies.
What were the companies?
Armstrong?
Armstrong, Arconic, and one of them
Dent
Clean Light.
Yeah.
And Dent Supply, yeah.
Are you still working with those companies?
Sorry, I had you on mute. Not as much, but every now and again, they still come in. So something I can go back. I haven't gone back and reemphasize.
Yeah, you just want to go back with your minimums and reintroduce yourself, you know, giving the higher net worth employees an opportunity to work with somebody a little older, a little more sophisticated than when you were just getting started. So it's a little different thing, but it is an opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Mine looks a little different. Mine was I went through the top, and I've got a number of physicians, a couple handfuls almost, and widows.
Were they widows when you got them, or were they?
Some of both.
Okay. But you like working with women, and they see you as an authority figure and look up to you and want to listen to you.
Yeah, I was always good with the moms.
Wait, I gotta.
Not so good with the dads, but I was good with the moms.
That's great, though. My brother was the same. Yeah. You know, my brother and I were both in the business, and he stayed. I went into management, and he stayed. But he was great with women. I mean, he loves women, always did. He served them well, took care of them. They loved him, and it just was a great, you know, it just was his niche. And, you know, if you're good at it, you know, they love you, and they'll refer you all over the place. So That's great. So who was that that just spoke? Was that Bryant?
Yes.
Okay. I'll get used to your voices. Anybody else?
Hey, Rob, this is Matt. I would say mine so far has been kind of a small mixture of sales reps. I got a handful of sales reps, some local doctors, a couple who are, you know, just completed residency, and then just kind of overall, I would say, employees of some local companies that are getting ready to retire.
Okay. Those are all really good. I mean, clearly we want, you know, doctors that are getting ready to retire, but, you know, getting used to working with doctors is wonderful. Sales reps are a really unique opportunity. If you can get into a network of them, they don't typically ever get called because people can never get in touch with them. They're always on the road. They're always selling. But they make great clients because they make decisions. You know, it's easy to sell a salesman, and they typically respect what we do, and they're nice, and because they're salesmen. So it's a great niche. You just have to make sure they meet your minimums and they're doing well. But that's a unique one and not one where you'll have any competition.
Yeah, it's kind of been a nice fit. I had a sort of a mutual friendship that got me in with a sales rep for kind of a major tech company. So I'm hoping to expand more on that over the next year or so.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that because that, I mean, if they're located where you are or, you know, there's some affiliation geographically, you can really jump on that. That'd be great.
Michelle, did you have anything?
I just think I was looking through my list, and a lot of it is earlier cold calls that I did a lot in the first couple of years. And then LinkedIn, like, you know, new clients from there. And then, of course, you have state troopers, which will hopefully always be my next. But those are kind of the three categories for my book so far.
So what were they again?
So I did a lot of cold calling in the beginning of my career with Morgan Stanley.
Yep.
And then I do a lot of work still on LinkedIn. I've had a lot of really great success there and acquire new clients to our practice. And then I have a close relationship with the state police. And so I've definitely created a niche there for referrals.
Terrific. Who did you cold call?
So we used to buy lists from organizations. So it was anybody in the area with net worth assets above, I think it was 250 at the time when I first started
mm-hmm.
the business. And so I just dialed everybody multiple times.
Did they have any of the ones that actually said yes? Did they have anything in common or was it really totally random?
Yeah, they're kind of random because they're going by net worth and the geographical area that you're calling.
Right.
So not really that I could see.
Michelle, what about the trust? I mean, Michelle is our trust expert, and we brought her in when anyone has a question on trust, so I think that might be a place.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an expertise, I think, within our book, but absolutely if somebody was figuring out how to move the trust to Morgan Stanley and need some assistance with that in terms of new business,
mm-hmm.
or like Rob and I have been doing a lot of drafting within Will to keep the business with us upon the client's passing, so... it's client retention and a skill set for new clients as well.
Do you work with state planning attorneys?
I mean, I know some in the area, but usually Rob and I, you know, use a handful that we're familiar with and comfortable with, and the clients like as well.
Okay. Yeah, that can be a niche, particularly if you have an expertise in trust and estate planning and detailed planning for estates. That can be, you know, you're speaking the same language. That can be, you can do. I mean, estate planning attorneys aren't the greatest for sources of referral because typically a lot of times people that go to them are referred to them by a financial advisor.
Yeah.
But they do run into people that, you know, more and more today people are doing business with other firms, Fidelity, et cetera. So there is opportunity there. Okay, good. And I like the LinkedIn, you know, I'm a big advocate of LinkedIn. I don't think you use it exclusively, but as part of a chain of information that you're gathering on clients, and a nice way to network through a group that you've already identified as a niche, meeting more of those people in that niche through that particular party can really, really take off. So, yeah, I think it's being comfortable with LinkedIn is a great idea. And, you know, branding yourself properly, marketing yourself on LinkedIn, Facebook for, you know, for charitable contributions and things that you do for the community through Facebook. I think marketing yourself through Facebook is, that's the place to do that. And LinkedIn is a place to communicate with businesses and network and just become familiar with who your target audience is. So, yeah, good leverage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jen has something.
Okay, Jen.
Female professionals either building their book of business or in a career transition or about to retire.
Have you ever formed a group of female professionals or joined one?
Not specifically women.
Yeah, it's if you read the Supernova Multiplier, I talk about several pretty interesting cases of particularly unique with women. I mean, there are guys that do it very well, but it's more of a I think it works particularly well with women and women professionals because, you know, let's face it, they've got their own set of challenges. They start out as a professional group to help each other in business. We call them mastermind groups, but sometimes become larger than a mastermind group. Some people refer them as networking groups. But they end up, over the years, becoming very close friends. And one of the themes that you'll hear from me is constantly is this idea that we become connectors and helpers, putting people together, solving problems, giving to give. But in reality, I think making people say to me, how do you meet with somebody once a month, a center of influence? I said, well, if it was a great friend, you would enjoy meeting with them once a month. So the difference that I've seen is between people that are very successful with centers of influence and other influencers in the community and that form great networks have turned those into friendships. And you know, I worked with one guy, he said, you know, he got most of his business from a CPA. And I said, how long did it take you to develop the relationship? He said, 20 years. I said, wow. He said, yeah, but I don't have another 20 years. But if you have a way to do it faster, let me know. And so we worked on taking that you know, how long does it really take you to build a friendship, a real friendship? It could take you, you know. Go ahead. Yeah, it can take you years, you know, and it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. I mean, you know, once you build those, the trust is there and then the referrals come. But it, oftentimes it takes that time until you really become friends for them to seriously refer business on a regular basis to you. So when you think about it that way versus, oh, I want to meet with a CPA and a bunch of CPAs and I'll do some continuing ed for them or something like that, and then they'll send me business. Well, it's just not going to happen that way. And you guys know that. If you've been in the business a while, you know, and you do this kind of work and you get referrals from people, you know it's because they've developed friendships over the years. So that's what we'll be working on. Questions on niches or centers of influence or we just touched on mastermind groups, but that will be an area that we'll try and work on.
Okay.
Questions on chapter 3. You know, we introduce the 5-star model, and this is where we want to take on roles and responsibilities this week in week 3. And that's a big deal. I've learned an awful lot about how do you create an effective team and what makes the difference between a really successful team that goes on to do, you know, millions and millions of dollars of business and one that sort of struggles. And so we want to try and what we do is we set up the roles and responsibilities, and then I'll show you how we connect it and keep it going, because it's fine to set something up that makes all the sense in the world and get the team organized, but it's useless if we don't keep it going, if we don't use it, if we don't use the roles and responsibilities and leverage our skills. We might as well not have set it up that way. So, questions on the 5-star model, roles and responsibilities. So did you come up with that?
Yeah, we've talked through that. That's almost something that we've been trying to figure out for the last 3 or 4 years, and this seems to make the most sense. And
yeah,
with the right amount of people and with just the right skill sets, and it almost fell into place without having to try to jam a square peg into a round hole.
Fun. Okay, I can't wait. Who's doing what?
Well, Jen has our planning VP.
Okay.
Matt is going to be our planning implementation VP. Michelle will be our keeper of the service brand and all things in the universe.
Okay.
Rob is going to be the VP of acquisition.
Good.
And I'm going to sit back and watch everybody else work.
That's always the job I like.
That's about normal, Rob. That's about normal.
Hey, I've been grooming for this role for years. Years.
That's great. Okay. Now,
and of course, Melissa's the CEO.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. The hardest thing in the world is to create a sense of urgency around keeping this going in meeting. But if you do it, you'll really make progress. How do I say it? You'll make progress not only with the team, but as a team. You'll develop as a team. not just get more revenues and more assets, but you'll develop as a team and become more of a, quote, team than simply people working together. And it's 100% dependent on the leadership. Okay? If you don't take the leadership piece seriously, then no one will take their roles and responsibilities seriously. Won't be any follow-up, and it dies. So this is up to
there's
you.
Also, there's also a lot of crossover here in terms of, like, you know, the planning runs into the planning implementation, but that might also run into some things that involve other products and types of solutions that, you know, insurances and, like you said earlier, trusts and things like that, that it's not clear lines defined with boundaries, but seems to be a lot of overlap.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the way I phrase it. You're in charge, but everybody is responsible. So you've got, when I was in the Navy, we had two jobs. One was to be a naval officer, and the other was our specialty. So if you could be a submariner, but you were a naval officer. I was a Navy pilot, but I was a naval officer. So we were an officer first and a pilot second. So when we were on an aircraft carrier, we would have to stand the duty, even though we were pilots. We would have to know how the ship ran. We would have to take on responsibility for administration and other things, whatever our specialty happened to be. And it taught me that that the Navy was more important than my specialty. Yes, I needed to be a great pilot, but the more important thing was that the Navy had to function as a team, no matter what your role was in there. The Air Force doesn't do that. If you're a pilot, you're only a pilot. You have no other responsibilities. So here's the way I work it here with this, that you're a financial advisor or you're a CSA or CA. That's your secondary responsibility. Your primary responsibility are these roles. And the reason I want you to think that way is because if you take these roles seriously and you actually do them, the team will function at a much higher level than it ever has. But if anybody lets the team down in their particular area, then the team will suffer. Okay? So,
okay.
And team is critical. You know, the teams I coach that have the biggest problems are because they don't hold each other accountable. They don't take themselves seriously as a team. They don't see themselves as a team. They see themselves as a group of people working together, not as a team. If you worked in an ER, you would have to be a team, because if you weren't a team, people die. If you're the Blue Angels flying together, you're a team or somebody dies. In your case, somebody's not going to die, but the team will underperform and there will be mistakes and there'll be problems. And people will start to not feel attached or connected or feel like anybody cares about them. So there's certain things that each one of you need to do in your roles and responsibilities. So I want you to read about it and really take it seriously. Okay, so there's a chapter in the Supernova Multiplier on the five-star model, and we go through in detail what each person's roles and responsibilities are and how to do it, and then when to meet and how to hold yourselves accountable to your commitments that you've made to uphold your role and responsibility. If you do it and you do it really well, you'll be amazed at the leverage that you bring. It will be wonderful. So
okay.
I don't want to go through it in today. I want you to go back and read the chapter carefully and then talk about, are we going to meet on, when are we going to meet as a team to present our roles and responsibilities? You know, when are we going to meet to talk about our marketing? So when are our meetings going to be? How often are they going to be? I give you some samples. I give you some ideas. But I want this to be your plan, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, picking the roles is one thing. Executing on those roles is a completely different business. All right? So I just did a webinar on leadership. You can watch this two, part one and part two, where we talk about the role of the leader. It's also covered in the book, but I wanted to do that particularly because this is where it breaks down. When the leader doesn't take their role seriously or the team doesn't allow them to be the true leader. Because you've got to. I mean, you can rotate the leadership. Who cares? But when somebody's the leader, they got to be the leader. They can't be waiting for everybody to do their job and hoping everybody does their job. They've got to be the leader, which means you set the vision, where you're going, how you're going to get there, and then you meet with people, develop those people, and hold those people accountable for those roles and responsibilities. So it's the piece that's missing for most teams. And, you know, you can't. It was, you know, any business, which this is, you'd have to have that. And we kind of, you know, we're non-confrontational. We don't want to deal with issues. So we just don't. And then we have problems. So we want to set up a model where we eliminate as many problems as possible and have great communications with a clear understanding of who we are and what we're going to be doing. Okay, so we just ran out of time. I don't want to hold you up anymore. Meet for 15 or 20 minutes after this and go through this and see if you can get those roles and responsibilities so you understand what you're supposed to be doing in each one of those. Or read the book, you know, read the chapter and then meet. But,
okay.
You know, really take this seriously because I think it's the key to leveraging a team, like especially like yours, where you have enough. You have the people and your productivity can skyrocket if everybody is completely committed to the team. All right?
Sounds good.
Good.
We'll talk
thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Talk next week.
Thanks, Rob.